Hello, students, and welcome to Class of X, the free internet course on how to read and enjoy the X-Men comics better. I'm your teacher and host, John Reisinger, and today we're talking through the first appearances of some of your favorite X-Men throughout their published history. Welcome back to school. Class is in session, and today, like I said, we're going to travel all around the timeline that is Earth 616, because I asked y'all on Patreon and Instagram and Threads who your favorite X-Men characters are, so we can make a comprehensive list of heroes and villains that I can walk you through their first appearances in comics. We've already gone over a lot of origin stories for characters, like in the episodes where we talked about Giant Size X-Men number one, which introduces, you know, characters like Nightcrawler and Colossus and Thunderbird and Storm. And I would hope at this point you would already know that X-Men number one is the first appearance of Cyclops, Marvel Girl slash Jean Grey, Iceman, Angel, Beast, Professor X, and Magneto. If that's new news to you, welcome to learning about X-Men. This is the place you should be if you didn't know that. But that only scratches the surface of the X-Men character roster that, frankly, goes on for days at this point. So I want to get into it and see how many as we can get into, we can get through before I run out of gas. So let's start off with a fan favorite. I had a lot of people ask about Kitty Pryde. Kitty Pryde is a character kind of everybody has learned to love. She was like a breakout hit. She was, the young character that was introduced in the X-Men that kind of played this role that has been the part of several characters, which is kind of like the POV character. You know, she joins the X-Men as like a 13-year-old, and the rest of them are like in their late teens or like early adult, you know, or early like 20s and 30s. Who knows how old Wolverine was at that point. And so everyone loves Kitty Pryde. She's got a million code names: Catherine Pryde, Kitty Pryde, Shadow Cat, Sprite, all of the stuff. But a lot of people don't know like when she came around, and that's the question we're gonna answer right now. And the answer is X-Men 129, which was released in October of 1979. This is like this is right before the Dark Phoenix saga started. But in this issue, Wingard, who will later be known as a mastermind who manipulates people with these illusions, you saw basically a different version of him in X-Men 2, the film. This is when he's starting to mess with Jean, who has the Phoenix powers at this point, and he's messing with her in hopes of kind of converting her to his uses. So he's messing with Jean during this. So this is right around that era. Kitty Pryde registers on Professor X's Cerebro. In fact, two mutants register, and she's one of them. And so he sends a team out to intercept this new mutant and to coerce or convince or, you know, ask permission from their parents if they're a young kid, which they usually were at this point, because this is when like all mutants manifested at puberty. This is kind of loosey-goosey now with that. But yeah, he sends a team out, and they actually come across a little bit of a problem, because Emma Frost actually gets there before them and tries to recruit Kitty for her team before the X-Men are able to get there. But like, while Kitty's like parents are like down to clown with Emma, Kitty gets major no-no vibes from Emma Frost, and that'll like maintain for a very long time, where Kitty will not fully trust Emma Frost for a long time. In fact, I think it's in Astonishing X-Men is when Emma and Scott are in charge of the school, and Emma asks Kitty to come and kind of like join her in the school, and Kitty's like, well, I'm just gonna keep my eye on you. And she's like, that's what I want you to do. I want you to be the one who can say I'm doing this all on the up and up. So this feud that Kitty gets right here on day one of meeting her goes on for quite a while. But spoiler, Professor X and them join up with Kitty and her parents and convince her parents to join the X-Men. I'm pretty sure, and I'm just drawing off of my knowledge here at this point, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure this is also the point where the way they eventually get Kitty Pryde's parents to like be like, yeah, we don't want to send her to that Emma Frost school, we're going to send her to this Xavier school, is because Xavier changes their mind. He just like flat out uses his powers in very unethical ways. And Cyclops points out, it's like, that's weird that her parents changed their minds really quickly. And Jean just nonchalantly like turns to Scott and goes, yeah, Professor X changed their mind. And Scott's like, what? And she's like, what's the big deal? We do that all the time. And that should be a big red flag for Scott at that point. But it's not a big enough red flag. But yeah, this is Kitty's first issue. Again, X-Men 129. She like doesn't know how to use her powers very well at this point because she's a newbie. In fact, she kind of has this panel where she has like a headache, blacks out, and she's in her bed in the second floor of her parents' building when it happens. But then she wakes up and she's on the living room floor beneath her. And she's like, huh, how'd that work out? And so that's like the first manifestation of her powers. She'll join the X-Men and she'll be with the X-Men for a while. At one point, she'll join the New Mutants and hang out with them, kind of like a demotion. She really hates it because she like hangs out with the X-Men. It's kind of like a little similar to Jubilee getting her quote unquote demotion from the X-Men to Generation X, which Jubilee is another POV character that was like the 90s kid version. This is like the 80s kid POV character is Kitty Pryde, who I realize now I'm calling Kitty Pryde, but I know everyone kind of like has a different time of when they are introduced to her, and so they call her by a different name. I will always just refer to her as Kitty Pryde and Shadowcat. That's first and foremost how I always think of her. But like I said, she goes by, you know, Catherine, Cat, and all kinds of code names. But yeah, that's Kitty's first issue. Another character that people asked for a first issue info on was actually Emma Frost. I'll go ahead and just jump into it. That's the exact same issue. Issue X-Men, Uncanny X-Men 129, 1979, is Emma Frost's first appearance. And it's also the first appearance of the Hellfire Club. Hellfire Club being that clandestine, rich people, Illuminati-esque kind of a Eyes Wide Shut club that is filled with people like Emma Frost and Sebastian Shaw. Again, I try to make references to maybe other publications and media that people would be able to recognize. These are the people from like X-Men First Class. It was Kevin Bacon, right? Who was Sebastian Shaw? And then what's her face was Emma Frost in X-Men First Class. I'm forgetting the actress's name. She's from Mad Men. That's going to look bad on me that I can't remember her name. I feel like it's a season. That's her name is like a season or something. Anyways, that's Emma's first issue. So it's pretty easy to explain where she first came in. And this is, again, this is the beginning of the Hellfire Club saga, which goes into like the Dark Phoenix saga. And that's where the Hellfire Club really screws up and tries to control a ancient entity that is a celestial creature of life and death, known as the Phoenix. So that's Emma Frost. A lot of people asked about magic. I got a lot of people who were like, magic's my favorite. I love magic. Tell me where magic came from. Magic is M-A-G-I-K, to be clear, for those who don't know who I'm referencing. Magic is a very, let's call her a confusing character as far as a timeline goes, which is saying something considering this is the X-Men we're talking about, and almost all of them have confusing timelines, especially because there's been so many retcons and later explanations for these characters that it's kind of hard. You can't just read them chronologically to get their whole story. Kind of have to bounce around a lot. But Magic, I'm going to give you a lowdown of not only her first appearance, but I'm going to give you enough like bullet point knowledge that whenever someone talks about magic from this point on, you'll be able to be at least a pseudo expert on her history, so that those who are just like fanboys of like, I like that girl from the New Mutants movie, or I like that one character from Midnight Suns, you can be like, oh yeah, Ileana Rasputin, whose first appearance was in Giant Size X-Men number one in 1975 when Colossus saves her from a runaway tractor. At this point, she's just his tiny little sister. She's Colossus' tiny little sister, who is like this regular human, doesn't have powers quite yet. Don't know if she's going to have powers. And she just appears in a page where Colossus saves her. And then she doesn't appear again until about, I think it's 1981. She returns in X-Men 145 when Arcade, who I'm pretty sure is being forced by Dr. Doom to do this, he kind of pulls a Harry Potter Goblet of Fire move and kidnaps like the loved ones of a bunch of X-Men and then puts them into like one of his death game show trap mazes. So the X-Men have to like fight their way through. And Illyana is kidnapped to be Colossus's kind of like motivation to do this weird labyrinth that Arcade has set up. That story goes from X-Men 145 for like, that's like five or six issues. And by the end of it, Illyana goes, "Hey, what if I just hang with the X-Men and live with you, brother?" And they go, "Yeah, this little 7-year-old girl should totally hang out with the X-Men who are constantly hunted by superpowered enemies and like their school is blown up every other week." But anyways, she joins up and just kind of hangs at the mansion as a little girl that has no powers. It's not until 1982 when she, along with the rest of the X-Men, are transported to this dimension called Limbo. Limbo is a little bit different. I think I've talked about Limbo before in other issues or other episodes, but Limbo is not like the Limbo we think of in the like our current like religious context, or at least not what I think a lot of people think of. I think a lot of people think of Limbo as this in-between space while you wait for like whatever deity you believe in that's going to judge you and send you to either what someone defines as a heaven or a hell. That's not what Limbo is in the X-Men comics. In the X-Men comics, Marvel comics as a whole, Limbo is this like just demonic dimension that is much more hellish than just like vanilla. And so in 1982, this is when the X-Men get transported there, and they actually end up like meeting an alternate timeline version of themselves in a world where the X-Men were trapped in Limbo for a very long time, and were like much older, and like Storm is like an actual like sorceress and Colossus is like dead and Nightcrawler is like this like much more bestial. And so they do a whole thing in Limbo. They're there because Belasco, who's like in charge of Limbo, he wants to use Illyana for some magics. And so they fight in like 1982 in these issues for a while. And in the end of it, they actually all escape. But then right at the last second, Belasco is able to grab Illyana and pull her back into Limbo. And from the X-Men's perspective, only a few seconds go by, and then Illyana appears again in front of them, 7 years older. She's like a young teenager at this point. And so to them, that's how, like, it was in a blink of an eye, we can figure out that Illyana spent like 7 years in Limbo under being kidnapped by Belasco and being used for dark magics and being taught dark magics. And it's not until like 1983 in this limited miniseries called Magic that we kind of get this 4-issue series that kind of tells the story of what happened to her in there. She befriends the Shadowcat version in Limbo a lot, and she is taught by the sorceress Storm in Limbo to do magic. That's kind of where she learns how to do magic. And it's actually in this miniseries in 1983, in the first issue, that we actually get an image of this magic character that she will be. She's not really called Magic before this, and she's just Illyana. And this is like when the code name version of her shows up. It's also like an issue 4 of this miniseries is when that iconic soul sword that we all now associate with Illyana first appears. She's able to use her tutelage to form a soul out of a part of her, or form a sword out of a part of her soul, or all of her soul. So then a few years go by, she like is part of the X-Men, and then she joins with the New Mutants. And in New Mutants 71 to like 73, this is like in 1989, this is during Inferno, which we have an episode on Inferno, which was an event where the Limbo was brought to New York City and there was a big fight. And so Illyana fights her former captors, and is first transformed to kind of like this demonic version of herself, which is called the Dark Child. And then at the end of it, she is transformed actually back into her little girl self before she was transported to Limbo. So to catch you up, she was a little girl with living in Russia with Colossus, and then gets kidnapped by Arcade and then stays in New York, gets kidnapped to Limbo, comes back 7 years older, fights Limbo again later, gets turned back into a little girl, and then in 1993 in X-Men 300, Uncanny X-Men 300, which was like a big old milestone issue, this is when she is diagnosed with contracting the Legacy virus, which is the virus that only attacks mutants and is, you know, incurable and kills them. And she does. She dies 3 issues later in issue 303 of Uncanny X-Men. So 1993, she dies. And then House of M happens, and again, we have an episode on that if you want to check that out. This is when Scarlet Witch created an alternate reality where the mutants were the leading people group of the world, and Magneto was in charge. And in this alternate reality, several characters are like resurrected who are dead, including Hawkeye. And then a couple characters after House of M are kind of left around with because of Scarlet Witch's magic, like Hawkeye. But what happens is Ileana is resurrected, or a version of Ileana is crafted by Scarlet Witch's magic in House of M. And during that time, Belasco gets a glimpse that his like dark child is back, but then loses her and thinks that she must have, because the House of M reality disappeared. So then he goes back to Limbo because he was in exile for some reason. He goes back to Limbo to find her, and doesn't find her, and instead kind of reforms a soulless version of her via like shards of her that he finds. And then this soulless dark child then uses some nasty magic stuff, and the new X-Men at that time who got pulled to Limbo. And this is the second Inferno event. I think there's been 3 Inferno events in X-Men comics, maybe at least 3. Anyways, she's able to kind of use dark magic to then form her soul back, and she makes her way back to Earth. And this is the magic everyone knows and loves now. This is the magic from like the Midnight Suns video game. This is the magic with the big old Buster sword and the, you know, the armor and the horns and all that kind of stuff. That's magic. Magic's a confusing character. I have no idea if any of that made sense or if that was too much information or too little information. Let me know if like what one nugget you pulled from that in the comments of this part of this episode. Like, what's the one thing you took away of learning about magic? Which I hope you learned something, because she's genuinely one of my favorite characters as well. This version of her after House of M is like from 2007 is an awesome version of her that like became even more of a fan favorite than she was even prior to this. This is actually the magic that I really fell in love with, because 1993 is when she dies. I wasn't reading a ton of the comics at that point. That I was only 9 years old, and so I wasn't reading every issue possible. So I was reading like old issues and like, you know, DC comic stuff. And so I didn't learn about her death until later on, and her kind of like destiny, my love for them kind of became a thing that was like later on. But that's magic. Let's jump to 2 characters that I think are always on everyone's favorite lists. The first is Gambit. Everyone loves Gambit. Everyone loves that raging Cajun cute boy. Everyone is a fan of him from the cartoons. Everyone loves to play him in the video games. Everyone's sad that his movie never got made. Who was supposed to be him in a movie? Was it Channing Tatum? I think it was Channing Tatum was supposed to be Gambit. I think he's a little too old now to be a proper Gambit. Although Gambit's supposed to be a guy who's like in his like late 20s, early 30s. But I think Channing Tatum's not the right fit anymore. But I look forward to seeing who plays Gambit in the future versions of X-Men. I hope it's someone who does a good Cajun accent. Cajun accents are very difficult to do authentically, which I've learned from dating a Cajun person. So Gambit, where does he come into play? Well, he makes his first appearance in the 90s. In fact, in 1990, August of 1990, he makes his first appearance in Uncanny X-Men 266. This is a really interesting comic issue. This is when Storm had been turned into... I was about to say Storm got turned into a little girl version of Storm. That happens a lot to the X-Men. They get turned into kid versions of them all the time. I literally just talked about Magic got turned into a little kid version of herself. and Storm got turned into Magneto's had it happen like twice. But so little Storm meets Gambit. Gambit actually saves her from some perils that's going on in this issue. And there's some really interesting things to note about this issue of Uncanny X-Men 266 as his first appearance. Gambit's a really good example of a character that's not fully fleshed out when it premieres, which is very common. And it's fun to watch how he finally kind of coalesces into the very iconic and recognizable version that we all know and love now. Another good example is Wolverine, where like Wolverine's like claws were first thought to be just like, you know, attachments on his gloves. He didn't have a healing factor. There's all kinds of things about Wolverine that they were like, they figured out along the way and it worked out. He's a very, very popular character. Wolverine's first appearance was in Incredible Hulk. We've already gone over that before. Gambit's another one where it's hard to tell if it was because of a coloring error or a communication error or a change of their mind. But if you read Uncanny X-Men 266, you'll flip to the page where he appears and he looks almost exactly how you like think of Gambit right now, but his eyes are off. His eyes are like, instead of being like that black, those black, you know, eyes with like red irises, they're black with white irises. And his very like iconically colored power, his kinetic energy, like overload he does to inanimate objects, which we all associate now at this point with like this bright pink or red kind of color, like a magenta. It's green in this first issue. And the power seems to originate from his eyes, funny enough. Supposedly, this is because he was supposed to be a clone of Cyclops. And so his powers were coming from his eyes, and his powers are semi-similar to like a Summers Brothers, powers. Like Cyclops has destructive eye blasts and Havoc has destructive, you know, cosmic ray blast from his hands. And so this was like Cyclops or Gambit was to be part of that. In fact, later on, Gambit was also then toyed around with possibly being a clone of Mr. Sinister. But then that was fully nixed. And although he does have history with Sinister, he is his own self. His eyes do stay this color only for like one issue. In fact, it's the next issue, which is a continuation of the story. It's like a two-parter story. His eyes go red. So that's why I think it might have been like a communication error or just a colorist error, which happens a lot. Sometimes colorists like don't know what the correct color is supposed to be, or no one tells them, or they forget, or they just make a mistake. It happens a lot. It happens really commonly with skin color, which is a real bummer, because there's been a lot of times where certain characters have been introduced as clearly having a certain hue to their skin tone and have some sort of specific nationality. And I hate to point this out, but often they are lightened in their skin tone. Rarely is anybody darkened in their skin tone, but a lot of characters like Sunspot or Monet, they kind of like were premiered as darker skinned people, and then later on artists kind of took liberties and kind of almost altered their ethnicity. I don't think it's ever for nefarious reasons. I don't know what reasons it's for, but it's something like I just want people to know about X-Men history, and I think knowing the good and knowing the bad is important and interesting, and part of history is recognizing moments that, you know, I disagree with, but you know, this is part of the tapestry of this comic book that is passed around from hands to hands to hands over and over again for 60 years. Gambit premieres with green colored powers, and then one issue later has red eyes, and his powers now have like this, are like white with like a yellow aura, and they become pink later on. But 267, Uncanny X-Men 267, is when he also like switches to throwing playing cards. He's like playing around with like toothpicks in 266. In 267, he throws the cards. While 266 is his premiere, realistically, 267 is the premiere of the Gambit we all know and love and have grown accustomed to. But speaking of Gambit, the other character that everyone was asking about that is on everyone's list and is definitely on my list is Rogue. Rogue, I love talking about Rogue's like history and first appearance. Rogue's another character that got a lot of history that was added on later on. Got a few retcons, and she's got a really messed up story. Like, there's a reason why Rogue is so moody and morose and sad and confused and messed up, because her story goes a million ways. And I'm not going to go through her story like I did with Magic. I'm just going to kind of give you a few bullet points of her origins and her first appearance. But her first Marvel appearance was actually in Avengers Annual 10. Annuals, like I've talked about, are these sometimes non-canonical additions to the stories, or at least not chronologically part of the stories. I guess they're all canonical, but they are often like thrown in not chronologically. But there are these larger issues that usually have larger stories in them. And Avengers Annual 10 is where she shows up and fights and frankly defeats the entire Avengers team. She hands them their butts. It's great to read. I love it. It's a very cocky version of Rogue. It's a very like mischievous and villainous version of Rogue, because those of you who don't know, she is the adopted daughter of Mystique and Destiny, and like, you know, did villain stuff with them because they were part of the, you know, the bad mutants. And so Rogue was sent on a mission to defeat the Avengers, and they barely fend her off in the very end. But like their first like fight with her, as she just kind of like bounces around to them and just like fights Thor and fights Captain Marvel and fights Captain America and Iron Man and all them, it's great. If you can get your hands on either a physical copy of Avengers Annual 10 or digitally read it, I really suggest you do it. It's also got some really fun art. It's very old, but it's fantastic. But her first X-Men appearance is in 1982 in Uncanny X-Men 158. And again, just as a reminder that she's a villain, she fights the X-Men. This is not her joining the team or like asking for help with her powers. She fights the X-Men and is like a villain to them for quite a while. She's on the outskirts of the X-Men and not a friend of theirs for quite a while. Not until like a year later in Uncanny X-Men 171. That's like 13 issues until with her first appearance, until she's like, she joins the team, which is not a lot in hindsight, considering from 1983 to now is, you know, 40 years. And we've known her as a hero for 40 years, but she did. She premiered as a character that was fighting the X-Men and doesn't join them until 171 in 1983. And they're not happy about it. Storm, like, I think has a line in this issue where she's like, if Rogue joins the team, I'm leaving, Professor. And then the person who's really not happy that she's joining the X-Men is a friend of the X-Men, this character called Binary, who is another code name for a character we all know, Captain Marvel. And those of you who at least watch the X-Men cartoons have at least an inkling of an idea of Rogue's history with Captain Marvel. But for those of you who've never read the comic version of their origin together, I highly recommend you find a copy or a digital copy of Marvel Superheroes 11. This is from 1992. This is when the story of how Rogue got Captain Marvel's powers, which is why she can fly, has invulnerability, super strong. This is the story of her stealing Carol's powers permanently. She holds on to Captain Marvel too long in a fight. And her powers don't leave her. And also Carol's like mind is like absorbed into Rogue's. And she is like, sometimes Carol takes over, and like Captain Marvel is in charge of Rogue's body because they are at that point two souls sharing one body. And it's not till years later, till like her, the powers finally, like, you know, diminish, and she just goes back to Rogue, who absorbs powers through physical touch. And it's also not for years until Rogue finally makes up with Captain Marvel after almost killing her, which it makes sense that Captain Marvel kept that grudge for quite a while. There's a great panel in, I think it's in Uncanny X-Men 171, where Rogue is joining, where I'm pretty sure it's Binary just clocks Rogue through the ceiling of the mansion and just sends her into the stratosphere because she's like, nope. But yeah, Rogue starts off a villain, joins the X-Men, and then years later, like in the 90s and especially in the aughts and that kind of thing, she will then become like an iconic leader of the X-Men and join the ranks of people who have led the X-Men like Cyclops and Storm, which I love. And Rogue is my favorite of the X-Men, and I will love her till my dying days. And I saw the, I don't know if any of you were able to, this will come out before, before the cartoon premieres, but the clip of them fighting the Sentinels in the new X-Men 97, story or, show was, it sent my soul a soar. I fell in love with that clip and I'm so excited about the cartoon. I hope it's really good. I hope it's as good as this clip, because that was like, I saw Rogue actually being Rogue at the speed and, you know, choreography that I expect Rogue to be in a, you know, a visual format. You know, she like, she chucks a Sentinel's head at another Sentinel. It's so great. So great. Chef's kiss. Good. I'm so excited about the new X-Men cartoon coming out. Hence why the last episode of this was all about X-Men 97. While I have some more characters that I want to go through first appearances of, I've got like people asked about Jubilee and people asked about Dazzler and Archangel and Havoc and Psylocke. Psylocke would probably require something similar to Magic, what I did for Magic, because to understand Psylocke, you have to understand where Betsy Braddock first appeared, and Betsy Braddock did not appear in X-Men comics. Betsy Braddock did not even premiere in American comics. I want to give those, you know, their ample amount of time for me to talk about, and also a peek behind the curtain. The air in Austin is constantly trying to kill my sinuses. This entire episode, I've been only breathing through one nostril, which is really fun when you're just talking nonstop and have to take deep breaths. If you hear pauses all throughout this episode, that's just me trying to breathe. So I'm going to give myself a break. But the next episode is going to be, we're going to talk about some other first appearances. And if you have some other ones other than what I just listed off, you're like, I want to know about these villains. Like, where did Sabretooth first appear? I'll tell you, it wasn't an X-Men comic. I think someone asked about Jamie Madrix. He didn't premiere in an X-Men comic. So get your requests in the comment section. I usually, if you go on the Patreon, I'll answer in the Patreon if you want to put some suggestions in there, or if you go, or in the Discord, sorry, in the Discord, if you go in the Discord, I'll answer stuff in there. And then also on the Patreon, there's a comment section on there that you don't have to be a member to comment. I don't believe, I think you just have to have a Patreon, username. But yeah, I'd love any more suggestions to add to the list, and we can go through them rapid fire if you guys get enough in. But that'll be it for today. This is a very, very dense history lesson for you. There's going to be a quiz later on. I'm going to need you to tell me what color Gambit's first powers were. I'm going to need you to tell me who also premiered as a villain in the first premiere of Shadowcat. That's going to be on the test. So I need you to study up. This will affect your final grade. But until then, be good, be kind, be brave, and thank you so much, and read more comics. Bye.